Hello, everybody. It's Emily. Welcome back to the Men Moon podcast. So in light of being stuck at home, as we all do our part to flatten the curve of this COVID-19 outbreak, I had a virtual chat with my dear, dear friend, Lisa Gunger. She is a musician. You may know her as half of the band Gunger or from her latest solo project, Issa Ma. She's also a writer and a soul healer and just a super warm, fun goddess who I'm so happy to call my friend. And we had a casual chat about everything going on right now and some things that we can do to stay sane and move through this season. And this conversation is like a cozy blanket and a mom hug, and I hope it lifts your spirits and provides some comfort to you, just like it did for me. So enjoy my chat with Lisa Gunger. Oh, hi.
Hi. Hi. Hi, butt mug friend.
Yes.
Where are you right now? Are you at your house?
I'm at my house in my kitchen. So.
How are you doing today?
Doing good. Yeah, it's been... It feels like every day gets more intense as far as like just the severity of the situation. Like I literally don't even know where we're going to be tomorrow. It's just actually day by day.
I know.
Just trying to play it by ear and figure out what we need to do. So.
Yeah, I'm really regretting you guys not just being here during the start of this whole thing. So we're just all quarantined together.
I know. Well, I was like, maybe we could like at least do part of it because we literally have till April 19th. So maybe we could just come at least to like a few days or something.
Yeah,
in
you
back
should.
House and,
yeah.
Because I feel like that's allowed as long as it's not. I mean, they say like no non-essential gatherings to go out of your house. But I did read that one thing that I sent you guys that said that you can make like isolation cells after everybody's quarantined for 10 days.
Yeah.
So, and we're at 10 days now. You guys
so
are
we.
At 10 days. So I think we can, I think we're allowed to make a pod.
Yeah, I think we are too. We've been pretty careful and I've been cleaning our house like crazy and any groceries that we get, I disinfect everything.
Yeah.
It's been pretty bonkers, but our house is really clean.
And you think you already got it. Didn't
well,
you
Well, yeah, we think we had it. I don't, there's no way to know for sure, but, I mean, I had a high fever for at least a week and for like five of those days, it was 103. And then, so like Lucy got it and then Amelie and then me and then Michael, but the girls didn't have it nearly as bad as Michael and I. And so I just thought it was like a really bad flu. I just thought, well, I'm getting older. I guess when you have the flu, when you're older, you feel like you're going to die. Yeah. But I laid in bed like writhing. I was writhing like this, just like, it's the only thing I could do was just massage my body. Cause it felt like everyone says, it felt like knives all over my body. Everything hurt. And I was hallucinating. Michael had hallucinations, but we don't know. I mean, we don't know for sure if we had it, but we were traveling a lot. I mean, we went to Japan and a few different places. What was it before Christmas? And so we think we had it like in January.
Dang.
Or maybe,
That's so nuts. I'm like, how did I not get it then? Because I see you guys all the time. But I guess I wouldn't have seen you in that phase when you were contagious because we were in India.
Yeah.
And then we didn't see you guys till probably way after you'd already been sick. So
yeah. And we really, when we were all going through that sickness, we really quarantined ourselves because we didn't want to get near of our friends sick. But I think I also may have got it from, I saw a friend of mine. I had been in Colorado with the girls and I thought I just had a little bit of a cold, but then I saw a friend who he had been sick for 2 weeks straight and said it was just awful. He felt like he was dying. So I wonder if I got it from him when I came back home.
Dang.
So anyways, there's no way to know for sure, but if it wasn't that, it was really, really fucking
it
intense.
It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. But,
well, yeah. I kind of hope you did have it so that way you won't get it again.
Yeah. Even the idea that I've had it, I feel a bit like Superwoman.
Yeah.
I feel immune, but that doesn't mean anything. Can you have the feeling of immunity? But maybe even just the power of thoughts will help me. I don't know.
don't know. We've been like saying our like new mantra is like, we will be in the 20%. Yeah. Like, like taking ginger shots, 20%.
Yeah. I've been eating a lot of ginger and garlic and my breath and my skin and everything.
Yeah.
It's pungent. It is very pungent.
Yeah. Which I did hear though, that's like none of that will probably help that much because it's a new, totally new virus to our system. So the system's just going to be like, what is this? No matter how like much ginger and garlic you have. But then there's people who have it and literally never have any symptoms. So I'm like,
yeah,
who knows? It's just hard to tell.
Yeah. If Lucy had it. So for anyone who doesn't know, like Lucy's our youngest, she's five. And Lucy has Down syndrome and she has heart disease. So like having Down syndrome doesn't automatically mean that you have a low immune system. But so there's just a bunch of different, you know, factors that can go into what makes her immune system low. But she's on thyroid medication and so that helps balance her out. But then she's had two heart surgeries. And so she would be one of the people who are high risk for it. So if she had it, she has a high pain tolerance. So when she's sick, she just gets like lethargic and lays on the floor, but she doesn't ever really tell us that she doesn't feel well. So if she had it, it was really slight for her, but she was, she did get sick and she was the one who started in our family, but, maybe it wasn't just a cold or flu, regular flu.
That's kind of crazy. You'll never know.
But yeah, it's really weird walking through the streets now. It feels very, well, semi-post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, we went on a hike the other day and that was the first time we really went out to do anything. Because I found out, like I read, you could still go on a hike. And I was like, oh, I really need some nature. So we drove and it was just no traffic, like nobody out. Everything was closed. It felt so weird. I've never seen LA like that in my life.
So
it was so strange.
Yeah.
But, and then we drove by, a car had like, I don't even know how, but had driven off the road and hit like a water pipe. And so there was like this kind of crashed car.
Oh my gosh.
Water spewing everywhere. So that just added to the apocalyptic vibe. Where I was like, oh my,
you're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The thing not to do, which I probably shouldn't even mention this because then people will probably do it. But Michael was like, we shouldn't watch Contagion.
I've never seen that.
Oh,
I started watching Chernobyl the other day, and even that was like too much for this moment.
Yeah, that's intense. Like,
ooh,
well, in Contagion, it's basically like, yeah, it's a movie about what is happening right now. But then everyone starts looting, and things get really bonkers. So we kind of laid in bed like,
well, I heard they were sending out the National Guard to like keep people in case that starts to happen, like rioting and looting and stuff.
We have family in New York, and so we've been getting, like, we never freak out about anything. So even when like nobody here was really doing anything about it, we were getting a lot of texts and phone calls from family in New York letting us know what was going on. And then some friends and acquaintances in Italy, because as you know, Hillary McBride, Hillary and I were going to have a retreat in Italy. And so we were communicating with the host there, and she was like, guys, things are getting bad. And we were kind of in that mindset still that, like, is that true? Is that really going to spread? But then we got word that even if we went and we kept the retreat, Hillary and I would have been quarantined for 2 weeks, no matter what, like on the way back. And so this was all like early on when, you know, everyone, all of us in the
early
US,
on being like, what, a week, 2 weeks? It's like it all changed so fast.
Changed so fast. I mean, this was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
2 weeks ago, crazy. Everything changed.
It was so different 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So you like would even consider, should we still go to Italy?
No. Yeah. It was like, no fucking way. But now all the other, like so many of the other retreats are kind of up in the air, which we probably will. I mean, we're taking it one day at a time, so I don't want to say that they probably will be canceled, but, you know, the schools are canceled. Our girls will probably be home for the rest of the year. We kept getting updates every day from the school. At first, their school was just like reassuring parents that they're cleaning everything, that everyone was healthy, they're sending teachers home that have any kind of cough. And they were trying, our girls go to a charter school. And so they were trying hard to keep it open, especially for kids. I mean, because it's the whole snowball effect, right? Like if they wanted to keep the kids at school, because then the parents that work, what are they going to do if they send the kids home? What are the parents going to do? But then everything started shutting down, right? Like all the jobs and the schools and everything. But that's, their school is incredibly diverse and inclusive, which we love. So there's a lot of kids who don't have food. They had breakfast and lunch and then after school snacks there at the school every day. And so I really love what this school is doing. They're still handing out food to all the kids who need it, the families who were eligible for the free breakfast and lunch program. But it's crazy. Mm. It's like we've never experienced this.
Yeah.
Like everyone going through, not to the same degree, but everyone going through something together. And for me, it's like when it started, it kind of was like this unraveling. Well, like, so I managed some properties as well. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You told me about that. Cause we were talking about like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that book forever ago. And we started talking about properties and
what a funny thing that we read a long time ago, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Oh man. So we invested in a couple of properties a long time ago, just saved up, and then got a duplex in Michigan. And then everything tanked in Michigan. So like we've been through, some ups and downs with properties, but the whole idea was that like, if something were to happen, you know, that these properties would keep us afloat and that we would teach the girls how to manage these properties and that's how they would work their way through college. So that's the first thing I went to. I was like, well, at least we have the rental income to keep us afloat when everything else falls. But then our renters are even now, like a lot of them are contacting us or moving out and they're not able to pay. So it's just this like unraveling that you feel like you're like grasping at straws. Like, okay, well if that, then this, I'll hold on to this income. Oh, and that, and you realize how it all kind of unravels. And it's so devastating, but also God, like what a practice of letting go, right?
Yeah.
All the things that we think will sustain and uphold us. And when it all falls, like it's a lot of the same feelings. I mean, very, very different. This is obviously like a much bigger, a grander scale. But when we had Lucy, and we realized that we're going to be in the hospital for a while and she had heart surgeries and then our insurance was rejecting some of the claims. It was like, you just realize like I had this experience when we were in the hospital and I'm having that now, like when the shit hits the fan, there's nothing to do but let go and open up your hands and just be in what is. And you know, we all talk about suffering a lot in our friend group and suffering is what happens when we're resisting, constricting. We don't want what is in front of us. We want things to be different. And that's when we don't just feel pain, but we are thrown into the suffering of it. There's a lot of those feelings right now. Just me trying to let go, open up my hands and, just be in the moment.
Yeah. It's interesting realizing through all of this, how much money and financial security is like directly tied to our survival instincts at this point in our life, like the way that we live culturally. Having money is survival and losing money is the biggest threat to your survival. So all of that is like, that's where we start to go. All those primitive instincts thinking about what do I do? How do I figure this out? How do I make sure that I'm going to be okay and that my family's going to be okay? That's all tied to the economy and our income. And what we're facing right now is not just like an individual, oh, like this thing for me kind of fell through or this industry fell through. No, this is like an economic recession that apparently I was doing some research on it and it has been coming already. This just kind of sped it up. It came a little sooner because of the coronavirus, but that's why we were talking the other night in the hot tub about like all those CEOs pulling out. And it's because they knew that this was already coming. Everybody just thought it was going to be a little bit later. Yeah. So, and it's, I mean, I've never faced anything like this in my life as far as like a massive crash of the entire system.
Yeah.
But that's what we're looking at. And that's, there's like nothing scarier to the modern human being.
Yeah.
Than that.
Yeah.
That's a big old threat.
It's a big threat. It's a big threat to our survival. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
and then on top of that, to have a physical threat of this virus, you know, at the same time, it's just, it puts you in this space of overload where you're like, I don't know how to process all of this happening at once and everything's changing on such a day-to-day basis. It kind of forces you to live in the moment when those things happen because
you can't handle.
We literally can't think about the future right now because we don't know what's going to happen. We can't make plans. Mm-hmm. We can't like try to protect ourselves and figure that this, we just have to take it day by day.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nuts.
Well, and that's like, we actually, I don't want to say like there was some that I like knew for sure, but I was like really feeling that energetically. Mm-hmm. Like something is about to happen. And things are like, it just felt like we were about to go into a recession. And so Michael and I had several talks about just, let's just sell everything and get a tiny house or live as simply as we can. And I mean, there's nothing to do about that now, but I want to be like, well, it's, I didn't know for certain, but even that, like we can look back and be like, well, I should have done, or you can get caught up. And that's all getting caught up in the past or the future, which doesn't help us at all. Doesn't help our nervous system. But if it seems like, I mean, even with a, it's all perfect as it is with communication and how we can communicate with everyone and we can see what's happening around the world. But what a wild thing. Like when the bubonic plague happened, or you know, smallpox, all these like major epidemics that happened in the past, they didn't know it was happening to the entire world. Like someone would maybe ride up on a horse like months later and be like, oh yeah, you guys are, this is what this other town, this other village is experiencing. They had they didn't have the capabilities to know it was happening to everyone. And so that's a really big weight on our nervous system to know that it's happening to everyone. So on one hand, it's like, I feel this unity with everyone, really beautiful unity that I've never felt before, because we can be such, people of like our country and, instead of global citizens. So there's this unity that's happening, but there's also like an overload to our nervous system because we're just don't have the capacity to deal with that kind of stress.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting too, to think about. I feel like I've seen such a divide in the response to all of this, and any content that I've seen put out or that I've put out that has any sort of positive outlook on it. There's so many people that are like, this is very serious. Like, this is not a good thing. Like, don't lessen this. And it seems like because we're such a dualistic culture, people want to make something either this is a bad thing or this is a good thing.
Yeah.
But the reality is that everything is both, including this. And depending on the perspective that you're looking at it and what piece of it you're looking at, there's horrible things happening, devastating things happening, but there's also a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of beauty. There's a lot of opportunity for unity and coming together and for growth, both personally and collectively. But that doesn't lessen the fact that this is a horrible thing, mm-hmm. and people are dying and it's very sad. And I've just noticed a lot of that duality in the collective response of people mm-hmm. either wanting to be like, this is fine, guys, this is good, the yeah. earth is getting better, like
yeah.
everything's happy, or people being like, this is the worst and it's like just bad, don't say it's good. And mm-hmm. I think it's important in a time like this to look at the fact that it can be both at the same time.
Yeah.
And to be able to hold that together.
Yeah. You're really right in that. There's even moments I've, like, you have to be able to laugh.
Yeah.
At pain. Like,
yeah.
That's like, I feel like I have to. And I learned that with losing some friends. And then when we were in the hospital with Lucy, like, Michael and I found ourselves like laughing at really dark things. But when you're face to face with death, there's
yeah.
a multitude of things that can happen. One of which you can also see, like, oh, death isn't, it's really, really painful. It's also not the last thing. Mm-hmm. Like, in how you look at it, you know, we talk about, it's like the hand opening. It's, mm-hmm. it's just changing form. And we can be so attached to the form. And that's, you know, you're suffering because that form is dying. We have this mm-hmm. particular word, an attachment to what it is when people we love pass away. And it's very, and it's, I think, so we've, okay, sorry, I'm like thinking of a bunch of different things, but like we would start laughing and making like pretty dark jokes. And then I would feel badly about it.
Yeah.
Because then my mind would always go to, well, there's someone else. Like, we haven't lost Lucy yet. When we were in the hospital, this is the thought I had. Well, she might die. We haven't lost her yet. I shouldn't joke about death because there's parents who have lost their children. Mm-hmm. And that felt dishonoring, I guess, mm-hmm. of their child's life. But you're right. We have to be able to hold both mm-hmm. things, all things, and let people get through it. How it feels good for their bodies to get through it. I found this pair of Michael's shoes. Have you seen Michael's weird elf shoes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
They're so gross. They have like these holes in them. And I almost posted this picture on Instagram that said, guys, I know where the coronavirus came from. And it's going to be in his shoes. But I didn't do it because I thought it would be offensive to people.
Yeah.
But we were laughing hysterically. And then I was like, well, I mean, no one here, like we're okay. We didn't die. Is that offensive to someone else? But then humor helps us. It yeah. helps us cope. It's yeah. It's a coping mechanism, just like mm-hmm. so many things. So we've gone, yeah, there's been days I'm like laughing hysterically and sending friends all kinds of jokes, and then days I've just been, I just like, I'm in a clump on the floor going, what is yeah. going on? Is this trying to predict, you know, my brain gets into the future mode, trying to predict what's going to happen, and feeling grief for all of the people who've lost loved ones. And then I feel guilty for laughing because they're going through intense pain.
Yeah.
And people lose, you know, moving in with family, like not able to pay their bills. I mean, but also, like this, it's happening on a much larger scale right now, but that's also always happening.
Yeah.
I mean, people yeah. are always dying. And so when we make a joke, just in a quote unquote, like typical day, mm-hmm. none of us are going, you shouldn't joke like that because somebody is dying. Also someone is being born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always happening all at once. And yeah. that is what life is. It's all yeah. of it all together, all at once, all connected. You yeah. can't separate those things from each other.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's been a big observation and realization that I've had among all of this for sure, because I think people are afraid of, they're afraid of invalidating pain or lessening it or also avoiding it. I think people are afraid of like using positivity to avoid what you're feeling. So I think there's a subtlety there in embracing all of it and kind of the roller coaster of the ups and downs of, okay, I'm feeling really sad and in the pain right now, and accepting that, not resisting that either. And then if you want to laugh and have a dance party and like, then be there and allow all of it, allow all the roller coaster of emotions, and don't have judgment towards anything that you're feeling or needing. And knowing that that's a process and that it's all okay. And as a content creator, it's been really interesting because, and just being a nine, this is kind of my whole life being a content creator, but I'm like, well, this person needs this, but then that's going to make this person upset. Yeah. And you can get so paralyzed in just trying to figure out how to give something that's helpful to everybody. And the truth is that you can't, like the making the joke or making the positive thing is going to make one person feel better. And then it's going to make the person who just lost someone upset. And that's just, you can't take any responsibility for that. Like, it just is what it is.
Oh man.
It's going to have their reaction.
Yeah. I've definitely felt that as a two, like every like group I think you've witnessed that from me. Like every group that we're in, it's sometimes I like can't just enjoy myself and the conversation I'm in. Cause like I like to call spidey senses, because at first I was just like labeling it as a downfall. And now I'm like, no, that's like a superpower. But to be able to like read a whole room and know where different people are at. But then oftentimes, that blocks me from really having like a one-on-one conversation with someone because I want to make sure everyone's okay, or saying what I want to say because I'm afraid it'll offend someone. And that's even in music, that the music that we write, how many times I haven't said what I wanted to say because I'm like, okay, how is that going to affect that person? How are they going to read it? And the truth is, you can't. And if you just say what you're feeling in the moment, there's someone that's going to be feeling the same thing. And it's for that person. And if someone else is offended, it's not for them.
Yeah, that's the downside of being somebody who's very empathetic and intuitive. Actually, when I've been doing all this research about anxiety and making a bunch of content around that, I came across a study that connected anxiety to people who are more intuitive and empathetic. They tend to be people who have more anxiety, which makes so much sense to me because it's the people who are aware of like everything and everybody's reactions and how people are feeling. And it was saying people with anxiety are very sensitive to even changes in someone's facial expressions more than like the normal person. So all the anxious people are actually just these very sensitive, empathetic, intuitive people who are just, they don't have enough boundaries to be able to separate themselves from everything that they feel happening all the time.
Oh yeah.
So it's just interesting.
Michael used to get in these arguments because, I'd be like, what was that? What was that look on your face? Mm-hmm. And he was like, it was just a tiny look. Like, why would you, first of all, how do you know what I'm thinking? And second of all, like, just don't worry about it. It was a slight thing. And then I will never forget the day that I read that we are, our communication is 90% nonverbal. I was like, see, I knew it. And just energetically, I could read him so well, and it frustrated him because he couldn't like hide anything.
Yeah.
But he was not in connection with that energy. And we could go on that rabbit trail of like, that's what patriarchy does to men, you know, dampens their ability to, not everyone, but some men's ability to be in their body and feel. But now Michael, I mean, it's the same with both of us. We don't even have to say a word. We wake up in the morning, just look at each other or just laying beside each other going, hey, what's wrong? Or hey, where are you? Where'd you go? And, a lot of times we can read each other before we can read ourselves. But, I feel that and have been doing a lot of practice around, just being able to feel my energy. So like it's, I could feel so, everyone else's energy so much that it really affects me. So I've felt a bit like a toddler learning how to do this. Cause it's sometimes in group, like the more in touch I am, the more like in tune I am, mm-hmm. With other people's energy, the more overloaded I was starting to feel.
Yeah.
And so, I started doing a lot of practices around like, I don't have to respond. My body doesn't have to respond based on someone else's like negative mood or negative emotions. I just found that I was shifting myself so much based on other people. Mm-hmm. So how can I be okay in my body and hold my energy here instead of constantly like it, yeah, going out or being so open that it shifts my entire centeredness.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of nuances there and a lot of work to be done in that space. I found too with Stefano and I in our relationship, when, because we're both very intuitive and very perceptive, but then we started to notice that there's a very fine line between being perceptive on something and then also projecting or having that kind of like viewing it through that psychological lens of, oh, you're feeling this way towards me when that isn't what the person was mm-hmm. thinking or doing. Mm-hmm. And so we can't totally trust that all the time because we are sometimes seeing or perceiving things in a way that's warped because of our own traumas or past experiences. And so we've been really trying to figure out, oh, okay, how do we be empathetic and intuitive and listen to that, like that dance between growing your inner voice, growing your intuition, listening to it, trusting it, but also knowing the difference between that versus perceiving something in a way that maybe isn't accurate or making a story about a look that someone mm-hmm. gave you or something. And the biggest tool that we've kind of found in that is noticing it and feeling it as just energy, but not jumping to a story about it without a conversation. So if I feel something or he gives me a look or something's happening, instead of being like, well, I just felt that you just were thinking this and making a whole story about it, being like, oh, I just felt something.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Like, let's mm-hmm. talk about it. And you can still kind of listen and notice, oh, something just, there was a shift in energy. Something just happened. But normally where it turns into an ego story is the story that we make upon that energy shift.
Mm-hmm.
Which a lot of times has to do with our own past issues we found.
Yeah. I found most often, and I'm still learning to like have this like combo of logic and emotion, like, mm-hmm. like my emotions and my logic can be friends.
Yeah.
'Cause we became such creatures of, logic and thought and reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way. And ignore, you know, shutting down the body and transcend the body has been a big, not just hurdle, but we've practiced that, you know, throughout mm-hmm. history. This is the place where we experience pain. So if we can shut this down, then we can transcend that and experience God, enlightenment. Mm-hmm. But so I felt that, like, I know I did that for a while in my life and then was so like, no, it's all about emotions and everything is feeling so much. I mean, the pendulum always swings. So it's mm-hmm. fine. It's fine. But
it's okay, guys.
It's fucking fine. But I could feel, I was like, oh, I was just caught in this like whirlwind of emotions, but my body, like so much that my body was like screaming, like all of the emotions were finally coming out, which was good. But I was listening and saying, oh my gosh, you've been hurting. You've been so, ignored that mm-hmm. now like you're really letting me know all the times I wasn't listening to you. But then there is that place where you come back to like, yeah, the marriage of emotion and logic. Like, okay, I know I'm feeling this, but also what I've learned is a lot of the times I'm projecting mm. my emotions on someone else or my, whatever ego thing I have, I'm seeing that. And I think that's Michael, but it's really just the projection of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been really good for me to find that balance that I'm still finding.
Yeah.
Still finding it. Yeah.
Dance. Pause real quick. I have to plug my laptop in. It just said low battery because I didn't plug it in.
Once again. Okay. Yeah.
Why I didn't think to plug my computer in before starting this.
I know. It's all right. It's
quarantine. I just blame everything on like quarantine making me crazy.
Quarantine. Why didn't I do this? No, it's quarantine.
It's just quarantine, you know? It's just going to my head.
We're in quarantine.
Yeah.
What? It like keeps hitting me over and over. What is happening? Oh my God.
Crazy. It's... Yes.
Like, we're meeting here because we can't meet face-to-face.
I know. We'll definitely still have to do one, like, once whatever day comes when we can do that again. I still want to have you, like, over and we'll, like, do another in-person one. But,
yeah, we will.
Yeah, it's weird. It's, like, little by little, just more is layers of the onion just peeling off of, like, oh, then that goes and that goes. And more and more of the day-to-day starts changing. I feel like even still it's crazy things where I'm like, oh yeah, like I didn't even think twice about it when we first were talking about it, and then I realized this is technically against the law right now. I guess if it's like a government mandate that we're not allowed to do that, I was like, I guess we should honor the government.
Yeah, but it's such a shift. It really is such a shift in everyone's thinking. Like, we just we've never faced anything like this, so we have the feeling that like, no, we're invincible. I remember the first time I experienced a tornado warning. I grew up in New Mexico, and so we never had anything like that. And we didn't have that. We didn't have a ton of snow. Like, there was a little bit of snow, but there wasn't anything like, there was no major earthquakes or tornadoes or flooding. I mean, we lived in the desert.
Yeah.
So I moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm dating Michael at the time. And I'm at his house and he's not there. And he was like driving back from a gig and I was waiting for him at his house. And we were watching the news and they were saying like, this tornado is getting close. You need to take shelter. And I remember I was just like glued to the TV. Like, I couldn't believe it was happening. It was exciting kind of, because I'd never felt anything like that. And then I realized, like, I hear Michael's mom yelling at me, Lisa, take cover. And they're all hiding in closets or like with things over their heads. And I was by myself in the living room watching TV. And I thought it was ridiculous that they were all hiding. And then it just suddenly like hit me like, oh my God, this is serious. And people go through this all the time. So yeah, I ended up hiding, but it's, and we were okay, but it was the tornado that hit Oklahoma City, and it was really, really bad.
Oh, wow.
At 5, it tore up a lot of Oklahoma City. But we haven't been through it before. So it's hard, I think, at first for a lot of us or a lot of our friends who are pretty, like, news savvy and pretty, yeah, I think the group that we all hang out with, right? What you say? Yeah. Like, even, you know, our friend Science Mike, like, keeps everyone up to date on what's going on. But I'd found, like, I hadn't talked to Mike in a while, and he was, like, one of my main sources for, like, the facts. And I had been in this, like, phase of just not watching the news. I got really sick of all the political stress and drama. Mm-hmm. So that's like the phase that I was in when all of this started happening.
Yeah.
But it's weird how it just changed and all of a sudden it was serious. But then you still have like what I could see, a lot of really smart people going like, no, this is not as serious as you think it is. And then these other really smart people saying, no, this is, no, it's not about how many deaths there's been. It's about what could be, or it's what it's going to cause to, you know, the spiral to the economy. Mm-hmm. So for a while I was like, no, this is serious. No, this is not. I was like in this tug of war for a little bit. And I know that's still happening for a lot of other states. Like I know people who were at a water park last week, mm-hmm. or people who are still getting together to party with friends. And, it's a lot of the parks in California. I mean, people are taking it very seriously, but we did take the girls out to a park just to get out. But a lot of the people were like, they're not doing the 6-foot distance thing.
Yeah.
And so it's just such a different way of living because we haven't experienced it before.
Yeah.
That it's hard to know. I think it's hard for a lot of people to really take it seriously and abide by the new rules.
Well, it's already hard for people to take action if it's not directly affecting them. Like, we have some resistance against that as humans where we're like, oh, it's not affecting me, so I don't need to do anything mm-hmm. until it's too late. And then that's mm-hmm. when we want to take it seriously. But the big thing with this is that we have to take it seriously before it's too late. But people are like, oh, it's not a big deal. But then they go buy all the toilet paper and do weird things, which makes more of a crisis because now there's actually a food crisis when there didn't need to be one. So it's just silly the way primates handle things.
I'm about to plant a garden here today. We already have a lot of stuff growing, but I'm not, I've never, neither Michael nor I have ever been people who are like alarmists, but we're like, okay, just in case this might be a smart idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like now I've started to realize now why people live off the grid. And I'm like, you know, that commune we talked about like a year ago probably would have been a good idea to
have been good
to have like a totally sustainable place.
Well, to exist. Well, when we're all like sure that we're cool, I mean, hit our 14 days, you guys can just come live here.
Yeah.
We'll have a garden. I mean, I'm homeschooling the girls.
Yeah.
We can make music, podcasts.
Love it.
And see what happens.
Yes. My gosh. How's it been having the girls home? Have you done anything? Do you have any advice to parents with their kids home?
Yeah. I mean, I have to be honest. We're really, really fortunate because we have a girl that lives with us, you know, Monique. Mm-hmm. But for the other people who don't know, we have a girl who lives with us that helps with the girls. And we got her early on, she started living with us about a year and a half ago and was helping with therapies with Lucy. And so we have some help, which I know a lot of people don't have. So we're doing good. But even in that, like, there's times it's like really chaotic and crazy and we're all like, ah! It's like we come together and everything feels amazing and wonderful and we're so grateful that everyone's home. And then sure enough, you know, there's like a fight or a blow up and then it's like everyone goes to their like respective places in the house or in the backyard to just get some alone time. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely teaching us how to be all together more. And I really like it. And again, I know I can say that because we also have like an extra body in the house that's mm-hmm. helping like manage the chaos. But before this happened, I was thinking about homeschooling the girls. Mm. Cause I really missed them. I was just questioning, you know, our education system. I was homeschooled and I'm really glad I was. And Amelie was having a lot of, there's just so much bullying. Mm. There's so much bullying in the school. And so every day she was coming home with another story. And some of it was in relation to Lucy and Lucy having Down syndrome and a kid making fun of Lucy. Mm. So we were kind of at this crossroads, not sure what we're going to do about school. So this is like our trial period. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like even this morning I sat down and was doing homeschool with them and it felt just great and cozy. And then about 2 hours in, I was like, okay, all right, I need to get out of here.
Yeah.
There's so much need here. So it's been up and down.
Do they have any sort of online or any school stuff that's still connected to their school?
Our, Yeah, our school is still sorting that out. So they just have like packets that they gave the kids that we'll go through that we just got. We just downloaded today. But there's not like a set schedule from our teachers yet. But there's also like there's a lot of parents who homeschool that are giving away like their daily routines and what they do and a lot of like art resources that they have. That's been like people are giving away a shit ton of free stuff right now.
Yeah.
Like Masterclass is giving away free stuff. This woman, Rachel Cargill, who I follow on Instagram, she's an author and a speaker. She does every day a story time for kids. Like there's just so many people who are doing free stuff right now.
Yeah.
To help bring everyone together. Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah. That's like the beautiful side of these things is seeing everyone kind of come together and do what they can to help each other. Yeah. And I've seen like online classes and fitness stuff, workouts, dance parties, like all kinds of things being offered, which just helps.
Yeah. I think like a nice balance between like calm, something that's calm, some kind of art project is nice. And then a dance party is like what we like. That's the things we most fluctuate between because you we're all feeling this energy and it's like, it has to move through you instead like in meditation's great. You know, like we all are involved in these beautiful practices, but what I'm experiencing within our friend group and the, you know, like sacred feminine that Hillary and I do. And then, just, I don't, sometimes I'm like, everyone's experiencing this, right? But it might just be Los Angeles, but like spiritual practices have so been about going away and you're in like your closet or going in solitude and being quiet and calm. But, and it's like, we forgot the importance of dance and movement. Even if you're wheelchair bound or not capable of moving around, in your body, like I connected with this one woman at the Wild Goose Festival and she's in a wheelchair and she does five rhythms dance with, handicapped people, people with disabilities, people of different abilities. And it's just beautiful. Like however you move, whatever you can move, if you can just move your hand, if you could just move your foot, if you can't move your body at all, but you're in your essence, you're moving around like your energy. That has been so, so helpful. So like, instead of like having both of those practices, being able to sit and meditate and calm, but then also just letting the energy just go and just moving your body, like that's been so good for us. And it's so important. It's so important for all of us, but yeah, kids having all of this energy, they feel the energy that's happening. Like our girls have been way more emotional right now than other times.
Yeah.
Or than before this started happening is what I mean. And they need that release. Yeah. So instead of just being like, sit down, be calm, they need to move. Like our bodies are made to move and we're so sedentary. We need practices that help us, move the energy.
I've been on the same page where I feel like just dancing and moving my body has been such a huge practice. I wouldn't even call it practice because it's not like, I feel like that word sometimes creates this structured aspect to it, but it's just been so helpful in allowing me to arrive in a space where I feel more present. I feel more in tune with myself and what's going on, getting out of my mind and getting out of my thoughts. It's been really, really helpful and brought kind of a new flavor to that versus just sitting and meditating, which is also great. But like you said, it's different. And I think that anything can be a spiritual practice, if that's what you want to call it. Anything can be something that moves you into the moment and out of your mind. Anything can be something that makes you feel more connected or whatever it is that you're looking for in what one would call a spiritual practice. We can find that in a lot of different things. So,
yeah. You know, I'm really glad you said that because I've been, do we need to cut this off?
Oh no.
Okay. Like, wait, should we stop right now?
No, we're good.
Because I've been thinking about that. Like this, all these things that we've labeled spiritual practice that just makes it very serious sounding.
Yeah.
And just how everything, I don't want to say should be play, but everything can be play.
Yeah.
And isn't that feel better than like,
yeah,
even in like, I remember practicing piano as a kid, and I mean, there's certain things that felt more practice, but it was about the moment that I got into the practice mentality, I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. But if I was just in play mentality, then it was really fun and beautiful. And that's when like I could get into flow, like the flow state. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I guess that's just like the ego trying to feel really good about itself, labeling one thing spiritual practice, and like it's still creating a duality.
Well, and the big difference I noticed between practice and play is being future oriented versus present oriented, because practice assumes that you're working on something for a future result. Mm-hmm. So if I'm practicing piano, it's like to get better, to do whatever, you know, it puts mm-hmm. the focus on the future. Whereas play is just experiencing the moment as it is, because you enjoy that in the moment. And that's been a huge shift in my meditation practice is in the past year or so, is looking at it less of like, I'm doing this so that I can create this result later or go to this place. And it was very escapist and future oriented rather than this feels good right now, you know? And that's why I want to do it right now, because it feels good right now. And so that was a huge change for me in the way that I approach meditation. And that's why I see dance, especially the kind of dance that, you know, we've all done together, and just like moving our bodies how we want to do it. And that's been a huge form of meditation for me, because it's play, it's in the moment, and you're just, getting into your body and out of your head. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that like points to in the Christian tradition, you know, in the Christian literature and the scripture, it says like, you must become like little kids. Mm-hmm. And it's so wild how even in that tradition, that same tradition, which this has happened in every religious tradition, like it's like, as soon as you start writing it down, like the people that are like, even like the people that are around Ram Dass, or the people that are around Jesus, the people that are around the Buddha, like immediately start making it formulaic. Mm-hmm. And so it says like, be like kids, but then you had to get away from the kids to do the spiritual practice.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, you're not seeing, like they're playing, they're in the play.
Yeah.
And that's been beautiful with having kids.
Yes.
I've seen myself try to like escape, and I just don't want to play, and that seems boring. There's no point or purpose. Yeah. And that's definitely been a lesson for me and my old ego.
Yeah. And we can play pretend serious, and that's fun sometimes too. But then the moment we actually take it seriously, then it tends to be less fun. Mm-hmm. I found like even the serious stuff can have an attitude behind it of like, this is still the game. Like, otherwise it's not, for me at least, it gets less fun when it becomes actually serious. Even in like my hustle mentality, as people say it, or like building and creating, which there seems to be a big juxtaposition of those things, of the people who are like, be present, be now, and then the people who are like, no, I can't, because I have to create all these things and I want to be successful, and people want to make those contradictory to each other. But that is the game too. That is play too, to build a business and like create things, or, you know, we're playing the game of life. And so even those things that are serious, like I'm being an adult and I'm putting on my suit and I'm, you know, making money, that's also play.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's the moment that like you feel like, which I'm talking about myself, that there's some hierarchy of like importance or purpose.
Yeah.
Like this is the lesser, which is like, and that's why like, even in some traditions, it's like, no, the women, you are the lesser. And so then therefore you take care of the children. Mm-hmm. And then the men can go away and do like the important work. And I realized that as much as I was like trying to battle patriarchy, I was following the footsteps that patriarchy laid for me.
Yeah.
I was trying to like fight it with its own weapons.
Yeah.
Like, instead of subverting it, you know, going, oh yeah, I've been the teacher was born out of my body and I don't need to escape the teacher. Yeah. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah. Moments like this can be really good to help people realize that too, because a big lesson is just the temporary nature of things. And so when things start to go away and we experience loss, that reminds us, oh, none of that mattered anyway. And it helps that, like, loss immediately helps you realize what matters and why it's important to be in the moment. It's like we're building a sandcastle on the beach and taking it super seriously and, like, really trying to get the sandcastle perfect when there's a wave, like the tide's coming in, you know? That's life to me, is like, real, like, enjoy making the sandcastle, like, be in the moment with the sandcastle, knowing that it's gonna, the wave is coming. It's not if it is, it is coming, and it's all gonna go back, you know, down, and everything you built is gonna go away. And that is life. And we take all these things so seriously, and we're building our empires and we're building all our security, totally oblivious to the fact that the wave is coming and it's all gonna go away. And so, like, build it. Yeah. Don't not build it, but build it knowing that you can't keep it.
Yeah. That's so, there's this, like, retreat I wanted to go on. It's like this super intense retreat. And one of the practices they do, like, they do all this, like, really intense stuff to, like, reprogram your mind and body. But one of the things they do is they, like, which I think is beautiful, but they take, like, cups and they like, put sand in the cups, and then they have to do, like, so many of these to, like, create molds, and then they destroy it all. And I remember thinking, like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. I just need to do that. Like, that, what a beautiful practice. I want to go do that. And it was like $1,000 or something like that to go on this thing. And I just realized, I was like, you are doing that. Yeah. That's what you're fucking doing every day. But that sounds better, because that that was, like, the spiritual practice, right? It's like, I get what they're trying to do is help people realize that that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And some people need to go spend $1,000 and to realize whatever. But I'm like, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I can do that here.
Yeah.
The other thing just sounds really romantic.
Yeah. That's our brain always wants to do that. We were on a hike the other day. And so, I don't know, we're on this hike, and as we were walking, it made me think about that hike that we took with you and the girls when it was, like, pouring rain. And, and I was like, where was that place we went with Lisa that one time? I was like, we should go there. That place was so pretty. And I was like,
I just said that yesterday.
You're on a hike right now.
You're doing it now.
Be on this hike. It's just so funny how that's what the brain does. It's like, we're already planning the next one or a different one, or it's like, you're doing it. Just be doing, what you're doing.
You know, it'd be really fun. I said the same thing when we were at the park with the girls. I said that was a good hike. I was like,
we should go back and do it.
It's like, I mean, you know what we should do? Yeah. That's so funny. I said the same thing.
Yeah.
This was like 2 days ago.
Yeah. It's just that that mechanism. I mean, we do it all the time with all sorts of things. And that's the hack, is to catch yourself doing that and be like, oh, this moment is good. Like, I'll just be here with what's happening now. But all our camping got canceled. I'm really bummed about it, because we were really stoked about more nature time, but I guess all the parks are closing. So sad.
Yeah. We'll go to the waterfall.
Yeah.
Again. We'll do that one.
Yeah. We can still hike, but can't camp.
Okay.
But
Well. Yeah. I did have if you want me to, I had a really beautiful poem from Hafez that I could read for
people.
Oh, please,
my favorite.
It's really nice that we can, just like, as we get towards, I'm guessing this is towards the end. Is that what we're?
Is it the,
This is the end.
Are you holding the gift? Is that the book that's in your hand?
Mm-hmm.
So good. It's my favorite.
Yeah, this one's so good. Yeah, there were two different ones, but I don't remember what the other one was. I think this is just is a nice, you could say, practice or play, whatever you like to call it, for people who are having a hard time being in the moment. I'm sure everyone has heard a lot of people talk about, like, if you're feeling anxiety, you can just sit and listen to sounds or name things. So sometimes when you're just feeling overwhelmed and meditate, like, just sometimes the mind can be like a water bottle rolling down a hill. And as soon as it hits the curb, like, the water is still going, like, inside the water bottle. Mm-hmm. And so for some people, like, just sitting down and trying to meditate can cause more frustration. So the practice or the play of just naming things and listening to sounds can be helpful. Mm. It's like a thing that helps the water slow. Mm. So this poem is called Stay Close to Those Sounds. It says, the sun turns a key in a lock each day as soon as it crawls out of bed. Light swings open a door and the many kinds of love rush out onto the infinite green field. Your soul sometimes plays a note against the sky's ear that excites the birds and the planets. Stay close to any sounds that make you glad you are alive. Everything in this world is helplessly reeling. An invisible wake was created when God said to his beautiful lover, be. Hafez, who will understand you if you do not explain that last line? Well then, I will sing it this way. When God said to illusion, be.
Mm. That's so good.
It's good.
It's my favorite.
All of us.
I got on a live the other day and just read a bunch of poems from that book. And I was just going to do it for a little bit, but so many people on were like, please keep reading. And I probably read poems out of that book for like 2 hours. And Whoa. It was so nice. It was like the best. I like burned some Palo Santo and put some music on and just like read poems out of that book. And I was like, this is a good thing to do.
So
yeah, poetry helps in times like this.
Yeah.
It's good. Heals the soul. Yeah. That's one of his poems is my favorite quote, poem, ever, anything like that you want to call it ever is, see if I can quote it word for word, probably not. But he said, a poet is someone who can pour light into a cup and lift it to quench your parched holy mouth.
Yes.
My favorite.
That's good. That's really good. Okay. I gotta be honest. I skipped over a word here.
You did.
And I did it. I totally did it intentionally because I was like, no, that's too much for people right now.
What did it say?
And so this whole conversation, I'm like, I did it. I couldn't hold both. I couldn't hold it all. Like, I couldn't do it. Oh my God.
Wait, what was
so
the word?
I skipped over the word. So I'm going to say this part again. Yeah. Like my tunis was like, that's no, you got to be careful for everyone.
I do that too.
Some people can.
I live censor things that I read sometimes.
Do you?
I was recording a guided meditation last night for these meditations I'm putting out. And one of them I had written like a year ago, and I've just changed a little bit in the way that I word things now. And I'm like reading from the script of this meditation. And as I'm recording it, I changed like three words as I was reading it. Cause I was like, I don't want to say that. So I don't want to see that thing.
Yeah.
Okay. What was it?
Well, then I'm like, I can't change. Like, this is what we were in my mind. I was like, this is what we were just talking about. And I can't change the words of Hafez.
No.
Well, to be honest, I mean, like, to be, not to be honest, but to be, how was the word? Someone translated this, you know?
Yes, definitely.
So I guess it's fine to skip over a word, but this is needed. So what it actually says is, an invisible wake was created when God said to his beautiful dead lover, be.
Mm.
So I felt the need to take that out because of all the death that is happening.
Not because God was referred to as a he.
That's what I should have censored. Okay, what I'm going to say is an invisible wig was created when God said to her beautiful dead lover.
No, it's funny because I actually think when I was reading all those poems out of that book on the live, there was a few times where I live censored a few moments because sometimes the language of that book, I don't know if it's the translator or the original, but some of the language using he's and just the way it talks about God sometimes sounds like super evangelical or I don't know it, and in a way where I just was reading it and I was like, oh, I'm gonna skip that line or change it, which is my own resistance to certain language. But so it's funny that you did that because I think I did the same thing actually.
Well, and it's a helpful for a time, like I get the resistance because like it's been it's the pendulum swing, right?
For sure.
It's like we need to there will be an overcorrection to come back to what is actually more, or I guess more inclusive is when God said to their beautiful dead lover be. But yeah, it is wild even going back to like this beautifully crafted, all these beautifully crafted poems from this Sufi poet that is dearly loved, and they still used he and him, still use all of the male pronouns.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. But, you know, they were taking a step. The step was needed.
Yeah. And it's just funny how we get so particular about certain words, you know, because words make us all feel a different way based on our own past and associations and meaning that we make of the word. So something that one person might listen to that and be like, you know, having a reaction to it that's totally different than someone else based on their own experience and meaning that they've created for that word. Even something like a pronoun for God and which one you use, like, really is divisive for people. I mean, I posted a video yesterday making like a joke about like Mother Nature putting us in time out is like what's happening right now so she could get some much needed self-care. That was like the joke. And I thought people were going to get mad because of me like making a joke about what's happening or saying that it's just nature like wanting a break from us. And that's what I thought people were going to get mad about. But then there were so many comments that people were upset because they're like, well, no, God did not do that because he loves us or whatever, you know, just people being mad that I'm saying Mother Nature instead of male God. And I was like, whoa, that is not what I thought was going to be upsetting about that video. That's a sensitive subject, I guess. But which is funny because it's all words and none of it changes the nature of divinity based on what words our human mouth decides to be like. This sound and scribble is God, like as if that changes the nature of the all.
Well, it's like the friend and I loved how he put it. We were talking about like religions and how that is the feather that people need. It's like Dumbo needs the feather to believe that he can fly. And then finally realizes that he doesn't, it's not about the feather, but it's that thing that he has to hold on to that.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot of people's feathers. Like, no, I've known God as he, that's my feather. And that's been the thing to help me fly, but you can fly without that feather.
Yeah.
But it is needed
you need
for
that.
A certain time. Like our structures are needed and you're not going to let go of it until you're going to let go of
it. Yeah, like Michael talked about in his book with music, but you have to learn the scales before you can break the scales. Like it's that's how we learn. That's how we get somewhere. And I look back on all of my different religious parts of my journey and everything, all the structures that I held on to and then moved to a different structure and then a different structure and how necessary all of that was. And I still go back to some of those things and have love and appreciation for all of them. So speaking of books, you have a book that I feel like would be great for people to read right now because you talk about just having a different perspective on hard times. So before we get out of here, do you want to give us a little like summary of, well, not summary, but a little intro into what your book is. If people want to read it, they're looking for some reading in this quarantine time.
Oh man. Yeah. I don't have it in here. So I can't read any of it, but I, but the book is about, it's about perspective and where I came from. It's basically that, like, about the structures that we hold on to, that are needed, and there, but we all start at like a certain point, and it's like we all start on a dot, and that becomes like your true north. And the further you get from that, it's like I was constantly looking back to where I came from to see, to make sure I was okay. But how through pain and suffering and a bunch of big life shifts happened, how through all through life, I was given glimpses into the unity of all things, and how I just couldn't really see it until it happened. And one of the big major things for us is we had a little girl, who I mentioned before, Lucy, and then we had a, she had Down syndrome. She was diagnosed with Down syndrome, and we went through two heart surgeries. And then at the time, right before that, we were traveling the world and touring, and then everything fell apart and our faith switched and shifted. And just, I talk about that whole story and how painful all that was, but how beautiful it was to help open my eyes. But yeah, it was very fucking intense time. And I, went through depression and just questioned everything. It was just the hardest time of my entire life. But what perspective it brought, and I talk about where we are now. And so the book is called The Most Beautiful Thing I've Seen. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at lisagunger.com. I would say you could get it in bookstores, but don't go to bookstores right now. There's also an ebook. There's an ebook, and there's an audiobook, which I've heard a lot of people like listening to. I love audiobooks.
Yeah, me too.
So if you're an audiobook person, you want to go on a walk during this quarantine and just listen to it, I would recommend that.
I would recommend it too. It's a good book for right now, I think.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Em. Well, thanks for having a little virtual chat. And
thank you.
Yeah, this was good. And this was, I think this will be helpful. And we'll have to get back together in real life and do a round two. And but
okay.
Yeah, well,
I love you.
I think we're 4 days away from 2 weeks, and then we can make a commune at your house.
Okay. Commune start in 4 days.
4 days.
I'll have the stuff ready for a garden.
Amazing.
We'll make a bed. We'll make a bed back here for you and Stefano.
Yay.
I mean,
cool. All right.
It's time.
Yes. Now is the time for all the things we've talked about and not done. Commune.
It is.
Like finally launching my online business. It's like life's just being like, all right, less talk, more do. All right. Well, thank you. Love you.
All right. I love you.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Remember, you can always watch these interviews on the MetaMoon YouTube channel. And if you ever have thoughts, suggestions, requests, anything, just reach out to me on social media at emily.capshaw. Until next time, remember you are safe, you are loved, and you have everything you need within you.